Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 63 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode, I get a chance to talk to Scott Roberts from the Salt Lake Barbecue in Driftwood, Texas. It's an iconic place. A lot of times this is a place that people get their introduction into Texas barbecue. It's a little bit outside. It's 25 minutes outside of Austin, but it's its own little barbecue Disneyland. It's bring your own beer. Their pit, it's an iconic giant round pit where they're hanging meats and there's meats on the grill and they're mopping. And I wanted to know more about the history and how that specific method started, why they moved to Driftwood, why his family moved to Driftwood. We learn all about Driftwood, why it's called the Salt Lick, about his father and how his father built this place. And then he, in turn, has expanded it with his family and into a much larger business that's just fascinating. And it's really interesting to me because a lot of people think that the cooking style and what they have is just for show. And he goes super into detail onto his cooking method. So it's fascinating. I can't thank Scott enough for participating. If you're liking these, please subscribe. That way you can get all the back episodes. I have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/kevinsbbqjoints. I also have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com. But enjoy this.
The Roberts family's relatives started coming to Texas with Stephen F. Austin in the 1830s. They were one of the original, I guess, I don't know, they call it the old 300 or whatever.
Oh, wow.
And so they were part of that. And then one of, I guess it was a great, great, great. So anyway, my father's family started coming over with Stephen F. Austin in the 1830s when some of the original, I think they call it the old 300. And we had one of our relatives fought in the Texas Independence War with Mexico and actually signed one of the Declaration of Independences called the Mecklenburg Declaration. And then about 1870-something, on my grandmother's maternal side, was from around Memphis, Tennessee, but actually DeSoto, Mississippi. And they migrated to Texas. And the lore is that my great-grandmother, she was an orphan, and she was 14 years old when she found out that Mr. Howard was a surveyor and coming to Texas. And he went to her and asked her, told him that if you will marry me and take me to Texas, I can't promise you I'll ever love you, but I'll bear and raise all your children. And they had 9 children.
Wow.
They originally moved down near, they were more on the coastal plain, near the San Marcos River.
Okay.
And she didn't like it because she thought there was too much mist, and it made the children sick. As a matter of fact, she lost a child there.
Oh, wow.
And so she wanted to move to the hill country for health reasons.
Oh, interesting.
So she moved on up to the hill country, and they settled in Driftwood. And the reason they settled there, I'll go into that later, but they were cotton farmers.
Okay.
And Driftwood is one of the few areas in the hill country that actually has dirt. So they moved there, and they were cotton farmers. And then the Robertses moved to another close-by town called Dripping Springs.
Mm-hmm.
And they were basically mule skinners.
Oh, wow.
So the original 18-wheeler drivers, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And my grandmother was 16. My grandfather was 20. She was a Howard. He was a Roberts. The Howards were, you know, real strict Baptists, and the Robertses were known for drinking whiskey and playing guitars and dancing. So they told her she couldn't marry him. So they ran off, eloped, and ran away.
Okay.
And then the Howard family kicked her out of Driftwood, wouldn't speak to her for 2 years.
Oh my gosh.
And then they wrote her a letter and said that everything's forgiven, you can come home. Within 90 days, my grandparents bought the track where the Salt Lick is. So that was in
1902.
And so then my father was born and raised on the property, and he met my mother during World War II in Hawaii. And he, after World War II, he built bridges. He was in the construction business during World War II, and after World War II, he built bridges all over the state, and he had to be gone from Driftwood too much. He would leave on a Sunday evening, get back on a Friday evening.
Oh.
And if you ever come to Driftwood, you'll understand this. He just wanted to live in Driftwood. Mm-hmm. So they just quit. And my mother and he sat down at the kitchen table at the ranch and wrote down 54 things that the family could do as an enterprises together, and he could stay in Driftwood, and the Salt Lick was the 14th thing on the list. And
that's so specific.
Yeah. One day he had, I wish I still had the list, but I don't.
That would be really great.
One day he had me and another guy meet him at on the site where the Salt Lick is, and he got out of his truck, and he looked around, and he made a mark in the ground with his boot, and then he went back to the truck and got his barbecue fork and held it out and made another mark. And so that big round pit that you see, the original mm-hmm. one was sized just so he could reach the middle.
Oh, really?
And then me and another guy went and got rocks off the ranch and sand and gravel out of the creek and built him his pit. And then we cut all the understory down for him and then laid the fence down. And he would sleep on a cot and cook meat, and people would just pull in and buy stuff from him and take it with him or eat it on the hood and the tailgate. So that went on for about 2 years until we finally got a building built around it. And the original building sat 12 people. And when we opened it, there was no running water, no electricity. It was candles and lanterns. And we made everything at the farmhouse and brought it down to the restaurant. And it stayed that way for about 2 years.
Okay.
And my father was a very hill country friendly guy. And so he did not like people standing in line. So the original building had three rock walls and one wood wall. And every time the line got over an hour, hour and a half, we would add on to the building. And then the original building, he hit a tree that he didn't want to cut down. So he stopped that building there. And then there was kind of an entryway then into the area. So he jumped on the other side of that one and started another building going the other way. And so we've expanded now, I think, 6 times.
Okay.
And everybody thinks, you know, you've gotten so big. Well, it was honoring his tradition of not making, you know, trying to keep the weights down. Mm-hmm. And he was also different than other people. He insisted that, you know, because it was such a long drive, we never run out of food. So okay. We're continuously cooking. And so that's how we started off with a guy sleeping beside a pit. And it grew to where, you know, technically we seat 700-800 people.
At that time, what meats were you guys cooking? Or what was
beef brisket, pork ribs, and sausage. That's all he would cook. He would hit me in the back of the head if he knew that I was cooking beef ribs and chicken and turkey. Especially about the chicken and turkey. He refused to ever let poultry touch his pit.
Really?
Yeah, I asked him why, and he said, well, you know, I grew up out here, and we raised chickens and turkeys, and I saw what they ate. So, you know.
That's so funny.
It was a different deal. And then all of the recipes and everything we do were handed down from generation to generation. They started coming over with the original settlers. And so all of our recipes are based upon the open fire and no refrigeration in a wagon.
Gotcha.
So
gotcha.
That's why they're all, as one person described it, they're rustic.
Mm-hmm.
They're very rustic side dish recipes. And, see, like the potatoes are just potatoes, salt and pepper, barbecue sauce, and pickled onions.
So good.
Or that's the way it was originally. I have to tell you that every generation tweaks the recipes a little bit, but I'm not because they're not broke.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother, her addition to the recipes is she added popped sesame seeds to the potato salad and coleslaw.
Is that because of her heritage?
Yeah, it's from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. But there was the pop sesame seed. She added that to those two, and then she added powdered ginger to the barbecue sauce.
Oh.
But outside of that, most everything we have is really rustic, and they're southeastern United States based. Like the coleslaw is the vinegar and oil coleslaw like you get in the Carolinas. Yeah. And places like that. And the beans are just you know, chili and salt and pepper and pieces of pork.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, like I said, they're very rustic. They were made when there was no refrigeration. So we make everything fresh, and we make it in very small batches. And then once the batches run out, then we make another batch. And so they're if you ever come to the restaurant and if you go back into the back kitchen, you know, they're in there continuously chopping potatoes, peeling potatoes on Saturdays and mixing and taking it out, taking it out. That way, you know, try to keep it as fresh as possible.
Well, you also too, on the weekends, you guys have a lot of people that come through.
Yes, we have a lot of people. The barbecue is, the way we do it is like they did on the wagons. They would stop, build a fire, put rocks up, put metal grills down, and then whichever way the wind was blowing from, they'd put up an earthen burn to hold the heat and smoke in.
Okay.
And then they would season it with just pepper and salt and sear it over the open flames on one end and then push it to the other end and throw coals underneath it and slow cook it. So, but the last thing they did, because the barbecue sauce doesn't have tomatoes in it, it doesn't burn. It has a high sugar content. Mm-hmm. So the last thing they do would bring it back to the radiant heat, the open fire, and put the sauce on it, and it would caramelize on the outside. So that's the method that we use to cook our barbecue, is what they did, is we season, we sear it at a high heat, cook it at a slow heat, and then take it to a high heat and caramelize the sauce on the outside.
And mop it. Is that how we were mopping it?
Yeah. Yeah. But in order to keep up with the demand that we got, we can't do it all on the open pit anymore. So we have big wood-fired, completely wood-fired, no electricity to, I mean, you know, they have electricity to turn the rotisseries, but it's all wood. Mm-hmm. There's no gas, nothing like that. And so we season them, put them in there, turn them up as high as they'll go to sear them, and then we turn them down as low as they'll go and slow cook them. But the last thing, people think then that the big round pits are just for show. They're not, because when we bring them back, we bring the meats back out there, we caramelize the sauce on them, so you pick up that flavor. Also, the meat, it drips down and hits the coals and flares up, and so you get that kind of barbecue grill mm-hmm. smoke flavor. So it picks up that second flavor profile. And then the last flavor profile that we get is we take pecan hulls and soak them in water and throw them on the fire to control the flare-ups when the drippings get too, okay. like you do.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it picks up a little bit of pecan smoke flavor. So those pits, we honor the original tradition way to cook of searing, slow cooking. And but the big open pits, you also pick up the caramelization, the smoke from the drippings and the pecan hulls. And that's why without those open pits, it wouldn't taste the same.
It wouldn't be salt lick without those.
No, it wouldn't be. We wouldn't have those three flavor profiles. And that's what really makes us unique. And then the other thing that we do is we don't season a whole lot. So we don't put a lot like cracked black pepper and stuff on there. We want you to actually taste the meat.
You're not heavy on that. You're not, that's, yeah, that's.
No, we're more heavy on the smoke mm-hmm. and the flavor of the meat itself. And nowadays we serve brisket, pork ribs, sausage, beef ribs, bison ribs.
Oh yeah.
Turkey and chicken.
And you guys have an all you can eat thing for the family
yeah.
too, right?
So that was created by my father, because when he originally started with the building on the, well, when he originally started, you know, everybody was right there. Mm-hmm. And he cut and served, and they got what they wanted. When we opened the restaurant in a building with a roof, and we actually started serving plates, then he wasn't that busy, so he'd cut the meats, and we'd take the plates out, and then every once in a while, he'd walk around, and if they'd eaten all their brisket, he'd say, oh, you like the brisket, would you like some more? And he would bring them some more brisket, or if it was sausage or a pork rib, you know, because it's that hint-friendly thing. Mm-hmm. And he wanted to make sure that everybody was satisfied and got what they want. Well, then when they got busier and busier, he couldn't do that. So he came up with the idea of just put it on platters and send it out and ask them, you know, let the servers ask them if you want more. And that's how the family style got started. And so, you know.
You could get plates, like just so people know, you can get plates, you can get it.
You can get plates, you can get, you know.
All different.
We will accommodate, you know, anything that's legal.
Exactly. And is it, and on the Driftwood location, it's bring your own beer, right? Bring your own
yes.
beverages.
Yeah. The other location, we decided to do one up north in the Ryan family, you know, Nolan Ryan.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. They approached us. And so we thought it'd be kind of, and they have some big trees at the location that they had that look like being at the Salt Lake and Driftwood. So we broke down and said, okay, we'll do it.
That's a Round Rock
but location. But one of the things, it's near their baseball stadium that they own up there.
The minor league one, right?
Yeah, minor league. And they insisted we have a full bar.
Okay.
You know, so we did. And so you can't bring your own in there. That's in Texas, if you serve mixed drinks, you got to control the in and out of the alcoholic beverages. Okay. If you're just selling beer and wine, they can bring them in and bring them out. That's okay. But, and we have a little kind of, it's called Salt Lake Cellars. And if you forget, okay, let me back up.
Yeah.
If you forget to bring your beer, then you would have to drive 7 miles to the convenience store and 7 miles back. And so we opened up a little bitty room, so you didn't have to drive. And we charged the same prices as they charge, you know, at the convenience store, so yes, you don't think ripping you off. And we have buckets. And so if you go over and buy a six pack, we put it in ice and you bring it back, and it's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. But inside the original restaurant in Driftwood, we still honor the tradition he started of not selling alcoholic beverages. Mm-hmm. He had about 14 things that he didn't do, and that he is my father.
Yes.
And I violated 12 of them. So the last two we still keep, and that's, we don't sell alcoholic beverages, and we don't take credit cards.
Oh, really? Okay, yeah, it is cash flow. Okay, that's great.
And then he, you know, he wouldn't have a telephone. He said, if I put in a telephone, then I got to answer it, you know, things like that.
You have telephones.
He didn't like air. He had no air conditioning. You know that.
Wow, that's.
Yeah, that was a rough one.
No, but anyway, Texas summers get pretty tough.
Yeah, so you know, like our recipes were rustic. Well, he was rustic too, and so we've lost some of the rustic, but not all of it.
Not all of it at all. Now, with the Driftwood Cellars? Is that is that on location or?
Well, behind the Salt Lick. Well, actually, the Salt Lick is built right next to my grandmother's cotton field, because I said they were cotton farmers. Yeah. And so it's been in agriculture production by the Roberts family since 1902 when they first got there. The last thing that we had, well, the next to last thing we had there is I planted peach trees, but I killed them all. And so we planted vineyards, and they're doing really well. Mm-hmm. And so we built a little. We have this building, and its concept is the fact that Texas beers and Texas wines have reached a level of quality that they could support themselves. So we only serve Texas beers as local as possible, and we only serve Texas wines, except for one wine that's called Brady, and it's from Paso Robles, California. And the reason we have it is because it has blue bonnets on the label.
Oh, God, yeah.
And the owner, Don Brady, is a well-renowned winemaker, but he was born and raised in Texas.
Okay.
Still wears his belt buckle and white shirt and boots and cowboy hat, and we're trying to get him to come back. But we're not going to be successful. But anyway, otherwise, they're really good. You know, when we were talking about why they came to Driftwood, the reason they came to Driftwood is because Driftwood is not really a town. It's a stretch of Onion Creek that has all these switchbacks in it.
Okay.
So when the floods would come down from about 30 miles upstream, they'd hit these switchbacks, and they would slow down, and the driftwood would fall out. And people would bring their wagons to this 4.5-mile stretch of Onion Creek to pick up firewood all year long.
Ah.
So the stretch of Onion Creek became known as Driftwood.
I love that.
The other thing that it did, it deposited dirt. So when you're in the Salt Lick or the Salt Lick Cellars, you're probably standing – well, a normal hill country ranch has 3 inches of topsoil, then you hit the limestone. Okay. When you're in Salt Lick and stuff, you're standing on 18 feet of soil.
Oh.
Because it deposited there, and then it moved on. And we actually took the soil and sent it to Segacio Vineyards in California, and they tested it for us and told us it's better than 95% of the soil in California for growing grapes.
Really?
Then they said, but you don't have our climate. And that's why we plant grapes from around the Mediterranean, where it's the exact same climate as we have here. So we have Syrah, Grenache, Mourvèdre, Tempranillo, and Sangiovese. And we don't make the wines, but we sold the grapes 1 year to a winemaker, and he made a Grenache Syrah Mourvèdre blend out of it and entered it in the San Francisco International Wine Competition, mm-hmm. and it won a double gold medal. which is the highest award.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that's crazy.
I said, so it was a blind tasting. He said, hell yeah. If they'd have known it was from Texas, we wouldn't have got nothing, you know. But anyway, so it's doing real good. Yeah, that was why we have Salt Lake Cellars. Also at Salt Lake Cellars, we have put in some wood-fired ovens. And so we have a deck underneath a gigantic oak tree. And so we're perfecting recipes out of the wood-fired ovens. And we'll Monday through Thursday evenings, we'll do different dinners over there. Right now, on Thursday nights, we cook pizzas.
Oh, wow. That's great to know.
And so right down the road is my great-grandmother's cotton field. And it's also a vineyard now. Damien Mandola of Carrabba's. Anyway, he planted a vineyard over there. So one day I told my daughter actually owns Salt Lake Cellars, and she's taken over from me as soon as she can get me to quit. I picked out a bottle of wine. I said, look, one of these days you'll be able to tell people that this bottle of wine came from your great-great-grandmother's cotton field. Mm-hmm. And then you'll be able to take this other bottle and set it up and say, this came from your great-grandmother's cotton field. And then you'll be able to pick up another bottle and say, that came from my mother's fields.
And that's wonderful.
Yeah. No, she went, yeah, whatever.
Someday she'll appreciate that.
In the space of 7 seconds, she dismissed 150 years of heritage.
Oh, that happens. So Thurman's Mansion, is that a location that you guys do
weddings? Just a large, that was a house. My mother wanted a new house, and I picked the location, and he started, you know, like I said, he was a builder. Mm-hmm. So he started building, and he built this gigantic, what would you call it, Tara, you know, kind of big columns, you know, mm-hmm. two-story mansion. And I asked him one day, I said, look, it's just you and Mama, why are you building this thing so big? And he told me that in the old days, pharaohs built pyramids, but I thought a pyramid would look out of place.
That's a good answer. So,
he passed away before he finished it. Uh-huh. And it sat vacant for 20 years, and then we remodeled it, redid some stuff in it, and put our offices upstairs. And then the bottom is an event venue.
Okay.
So they do weddings and stuff like that there. And then we have another one called the Pavilion on the banks of Onion Creek that we also do weddings there. And that originally started off as a barn for a cattle auction. Oh. And then it ultimately became an event venue too.
Oh, what? How did you get the name to Salt Lake?
Okay. If you come to the Salt Lake is the cotton field they had sloped up the hill from where the Salt Lake is up to where Thurman's Mansion is. It's a fairly decent, it's a pretty long way, and it's a fairly good slope. And the rule was you started up for my father and his sister, you started up at Thurman's Mansion and you had to hoe a row of cotton down, hoe a row of cotton back up again, and back down again before you could get a drink of water. And the well where he got drink of water was actually located right in front of where the Salt Lake building is right now. So when he decided to do this thing, he picked that area because it had a really good feel for him. Mm-hmm. And then the name came from the fact that pretty close to it are some gigantic rocks that they could never get out of the field. So that's where they put the mineral for the domestic livestock. And so that area was called the Salt Lake. So it felt good. The area felt good, and it was always called the Salt Lake Tim. So that's how I got there.
That made sense. So what did you guys venture into airports?
When the airport opened, the city of Austin was the first one that started doing local concepts in the airport, and they actually asked for that.
Okay.
And so when the proposals went to move from the old airport to the brand new airport, that's what they put it. That's what they requested in the request for proposal. And so there were like four or five companies that put packages together, and one of those companies happened to come to us and say, look, we'd like to try to put you in the airport, you know, as the local barbecue concept. And we told them no. Actually, that was the first one that came to us, and we told them no. And I can't remember why I told them no. And they then went and got another barbecue place in their proposal. And then this other group showed up, and I, for some reason, had a rapport with the one man that came. And so I said yes. And their team and their proposal won, and that's how we've been there for 20 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, because it's something that a lot of people notice when the first time that when they get to the airport. And so.
Yeah, the only problem that, you know, it just, you, it's, I can't have the open pit,
yeah,
all that other stuff. So it's just, you know, not exactly the same.
Exactly.
You know, the meats are cooked at the restaurant and then taken over there. So, you know, I've heard now that there's at Hobby Airport or in Houston, they actually got the barbecue pits behind mm-hmm. security, which is a very hard thing to do.
Yeah, I think they have it with piping and some kind of.
You know, at this airport, don't even think about that.
No, I know.
They told us no. They had one in there before and they went no.
Okay. Well, no, it makes sense. It's highly unusual for an airport.
That other one, it cost. We actually had my group took that over and we had to redo it, and it cost a lot of money to fix the problems that those smokers and the grease caused in that location. So the airport told us we couldn't have one.
Okay, that makes sense. So how many are you guys open? I forget, 7 days a week.
Yeah. We're closed Christmas Day.
Okay.
And Thanksgiving Day.
And the hours are
11 in the morning till 10 at night. And, you know, if you get there at 10:30 and we have everything open, then the hours are 10:30 till 10 o'clock at night, you know. And if you get there at 10 o'clock at night, if we still got something, we'll serve it to you.
Yeah. And what should people know that they won't be waiting in a long line? Like, it's not going to take, they're not going
to. On some Saturdays, it can get up to an hour and a half.
Hour and a half or so. Okay. That's not too bad.
We are also the whole deal is what we try to do is create the experience of being at a Texas backyard barbecue. Because, you know, in Texas, it's not just, you know, the whole experience is in our blood, okay? And the way, you know, you start with a brisket, which is a gigantic piece of meat. And it takes a long time to cook. So when you fire it up, when it used to be if you're in town and you fired up the smokers and stuff, well, someone would smell the smoke and they'd come over. And so everybody sat around all day long, you know, drinking beer, playing guitars and talking, you know, yeah, telling stories. And then at the end of the day, when the meat is cooked, you know, it's more than any one family can eat. So the entire neighborhood then would bring over side dishes and stuff. And then they'd play more music and sit in the backyard and everybody would share it. And so that's what we have here. That's the same thing that we have at the Salt Lick is, you know, this family style deal. Mm-hmm. Everything is picnic tables. When you're waiting outside, we have live music. And on the weekends, we have fresh squeezed lemonade and popcorn while you're waiting and live music. And you bring your own coolers. And so you sit out there and listen to music and drink the beer. And, you know, we used to win awards for the best wait in Texas.
Who wins it now? Who would win that?
I don't know if they still do it anymore. But I would guarantee you we'd be right up there with anybody. So we think that we try to say that we're the, you know, the largest ongoing backyard barbecue in Texas.
Without a doubt you are, for sure. When did you start to notice that Salt Lick was becoming something special, like that for people outside, like when were people coming from like a really long distance or coming from another state that you started to realize, well, there's something here?
Well, you know, we started. Well, for me, it started when we were only open Thursday through Sunday. And then if you were down there like cleaning or something like this, you'd watch all these cars pull up and then turn around and drive off and to the gate. And that's when it noticed to me that, you know, something's going on. So that's why we opened 7 days a week, because when we first started, we didn't have a telephone. So people would drive all the way out there. And then we'd be closed, and
yeah, that
was, you know, back then that was an hour drive from Austin. Now it's only 25 minutes, mm-hmm. but, you know, back, and that was a big disappointment. So to honor the father's tradition of being friendly, we started opening more and more days so people wouldn't be disappointed. I guess that's one of the times that it started. And then the other one was a friend of mine had a Salt Lick t-shirt on, and he was in Munich Airport, I think. And he said this guy walked up to him and basically badgered him so long that he sold him the shirt for $150, and the guy went and bought another shirt and got so that he could, you know,
get on the plane.
It wouldn't be without a shirt. And I went, okay, I think that's pretty good. And then it, you know, and then it's just, yeah, people coming from all over, but we also get, we usually entertain somebody coming and talking to us about opening in China once a year.
I gotcha.
In Australia once every other year. And the newest one is a guy called us from
Dubai.
Yes. How did you know that?
I'm just assuming. It just seems like a place. A lot of restaurants from Los Angeles have opened up in Dubai, which is
really okay. Well, this guy called us up from Dubai, and you know, like, I don't know. I'm kind of interested in that one, except for the 12-hour differential, and so we never talk. So I don't know if it'll ever happen.
Yeah, that would be fascinating to go.
And then Walt Disney came to us. They wanted us to go into downtown Disney.
Oh.
Well, they were thinking about it, and then they said, okay, here's the deal. You made the list, or you're our choice. I can't remember what it was, but when we do barbecue, you'll probably be the one we do the barbecue with, but we might not do the barbecue for 10 years, so, you know,
what?
We don't know. Yeah, it's like, okay, but thank you. You know, it's kind of cute, because I like Disney. My wife loves Mickey Mouse. Yeah, my wife loves Mickey Mouse.
That would be a great marriage. I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah. Yeah, but, I know we're not Disneyland. Some people say we are, but we're not. We're just a place that started on the side of the road, my father had a philosophy of adhering to, you know, quality and a product and friendliness and a beautiful location, and it just grew.
And that story, I did not know that story, and I think a lot of people wouldn't necessarily know that story, and I'm so thankful that you would take the time to share that with me and share that with everyone.
You know, like I said, we're Southeastern based, mm-hmm. So the barbecue sauce people, my mother found, her contribution was she found a way to emulsify it. So, you know, like a normal Southeastern sauce, you got to shake it up.
Mm-hmm.
Ours, you don't have to do that. All the ingredients stay suspended all the time. Huh. And so you get a cleaner taste across uh-huh. your mouth, and it makes it. And she added the powdered ginger, but there's 32 other things in it, so it didn't really make that much difference.
We know the powdered
ginger. That's it. And you know, like I said, it's just, I don't know. It's just things that have been perfected over time. Yeah, I guess it has 150 years of evolution.
Evolution, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And every time it evolved, it was in order to make it better. Because I'm sure that barbecue sauce, when it left Carolina, didn't have chili dulce in it or cayenne pepper, you know.
So I'm sure it did.
Everybody is just, oh, let's try that. So that barbecue sauce is actually taking on the flavors of Texas. Just like wine takes on the flavor of the dirt,
mm-hmm.
that barbecue sauce took on the flavors of Texas.
That's interesting to say it that way. And so people know it's only 25 minutes from Austin.
It is now.
Yeah.
When we first started, it was an hour
and
15 minutes. But then they built all these new roads, and
yeah.
Now it's a lot quicker.
Excellent. Yeah. Scott, thank you so much. Have a great rest of your week. And I can't wait to come back and visit. And I would love to kind of take a tour and film. And so that way people can get a really good chance to kind of
be sure to let me know if you're coming.
I will.
And we'll get some barbecue, and we'll get some beer and wine, and we'll find a shade tree and enjoy life.
I would love that. Thank you so much, Scott. Have a great rest of your week. Have a great